today's edition. Future of the playoff, the poor fate of the group of five. Rick Pitino sounds off, and can you crop dust a darts tournament or not?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I will not mourn the loss of the Alabama-Middle Tennessee game. Let us all have a moment of silence.
Russ Gellinger.
This is disgusting, but is really a brilliant mechanism here by this man to distract his opponent. I applaud it.
And SI's Pat 40.
This is Rick Pitino after a bad loss. He's the worst loser in the history of basketball that I have ever come around, which is one reason he doesn't lose very often.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we're going to start with the future of the sport playoff, which is coming. Very excited about the playoff coming next year, but everything after that remains quite in flux because this is college football, and why would we plan ahead? Namely, the television deal, which we've had various reports is done, it's close, it's going to be this. There was this report last week that they had agreed to a six-year deal with ESPN, $1.3 billion per year, right? Was that it? It's basically a little over $100 million per game. I was quite excited. I was like, 6 years, did they? That means they must be close on all the other stuff. Ross, you are pulling the Coach Corso not so fast, my friend. What do you got?
Yeah, so to take our listeners through, you know, about 6 weeks ago, ESPN reported that ESPN was talking about remaining the sole rights owner of the CFP with the CFP, and that they were going to extend it 6 years. And then, of course, last week, a report about The Athletic that basically repeated identically the terms, but added that the deal was done, it's agreed upon, at least both sides. They did mention in that story that, you know, there were hurdles, right, to some unresolved matters. Well, last week, I think at least one commissioner, probably more than one, sent a memo to his athletic directors calling the report incorrect and saying that a deal is not agreed upon, and even saying that the CFP Board of Managers, the presidents in the CFP Management Committee, the commissioners, haven't even reviewed a proposal on a TV deal. A couple of the athletic directors there in the MAC was able to obtain that memo that John Steinbrecher, the commissioner of the MAC, sent them that said all that. So he spelled it out pretty good that this is not done. And this is a really big week for the CFP and the CFP television deal. There's meetings Tuesday. The presidents meet on a virtual call. We talked a little bit about it last week. They'll talk about format, trying to move from 6+6 to 5+7, our long national nightmare. Kirk Schulz will pitch his proposal to seeking Power 5 revenue and voting rights for the Pac-12 beyond 2025, long-term guarantees. And so I don't know that, will he vote for the, you know, he needs unanimous consent, so will he vote for the move to the 5+7? Will they grant his proposal? I don't know. Hopefully we'll know something Tuesday afternoon. And then Wednesday is really even a bigger meeting. Commissioners meet in person in Dallas, and they will talk about what we've talked about quite a bit on the show, the future of the CFP. There's no contract beyond 2025. There's no agreement for a new TV deal yet. And the revenue distribution model, the voting structure of the governance and the format, I think, are three kind of unresolved matters. The SEC and Big Ten are going to want more money. They're going to want more voting rights, and they probably might even want a change to the format. As we've written a few times, Tony Petitti has thrown out there privately in conversations with people at the CFP to go to 14 or 16 teams, including automatic berths, multiple automatic berths for power leagues, or certainly his league. So there's going to be some format talk too. All those matters are unresolved, and until they're resolved, I don't think there will be a deal on a TV contract.
So do you think that will be resolved this week, those issues, or is that too much to resolve since they resolved nothing for months at a time?
Yeah, they're known for moving slowly. So this is a little urgent matter, because, and I think John Oran reported on his podcast last week that ESPN, that there wasn't an agreement. Again, he also reported that there wasn't necessarily a done deal, and that ESPN could pull the offer. So at some point, ESPN is probably going to give the CFP a deadline, or if they haven't already. So there's a little urgency here to getting something done, but they do not move quickly. So I would be pretty surprised if they actually settled on all these matters, or even one of these matters. I think, if I had to guess, I think the Big Ten and SEC will come with ideas or maybe a proposal themselves. They'll discuss it among the group, I'm sure argue back and forth, because they're going to be pretty aggressive. I think with money, they're going to be pretty aggressive, wanting a change to the revenue model, maybe format. Voting rights is something that probably will get done quicker than of the three. You know, I think voting rights, I think the SEC and Big Ten want more authority in decision making. I think they'll probably get it. But what they also want is no more of this unanimity, what they're dealing with right now. And they will probably get that. They'll get that there won't have to be any more unanimous consent to pass some of this stuff like they're dealing with right now with the 5+7. So that, I think, could be done maybe. But the revenue share and the format, I'd be surprised if they get that done in one meeting.
What about the filibuster? They keeping the filibuster? Can Kirk Schultz just sit there and read?
That's the unanimous consent. That's what they're. Yeah. I think they're going to get rid of that. They're going to try to find a way to get rid of that.
Do you need a unanimous vote to get rid of the unanimous consent?
Yeah, how do you vote for that?
So that's a great question.
Why would you vote for that? I don't think so.
I don't think you need, from what I understand. Now, you probably need the majority of Power Five to vote to get rid of that. So three of the five, which you would have. So, yeah, that would be the first step. That's why the voting structure piece is probably something that can get changed pretty quickly to I think the leagues will acquiesce to the SEC and Big Ten, give them more power, but also eliminate the
Thank you for following this so the rest of us do not have to.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a blast, you know.
NCAA, man. College.
Think about when all this started. It really started in January 2019 is when they started working towards an expansion model, but they announced it, you know, and it was public and has been written about for almost 3 years. It was June 2021, and we're still not at the finish line.
It started in like 2001. I mean, like something like that. I feel like this is like watching, it's like a late November game at Jordan-Hare. It's dark. It's at Alabama, rural dark, and like whatever team you got, the other one's driving, and you're like, can we just get this playoff before it gets screwed up? Just bat the ball down. It's 4th and 31. No, don't kick the field goal. It's going to go short. This is what it is. It's like watching the other team drive on you. Auburn's going to win the football game, and we're not going to get a playoff.
It's watching the other team drive on you with injuries, TV timeouts, other stoppages,
bad
et
calls. No, that wasn't holding.
Yeah. Oh. Reviews, yeah, replay reviews.
Somebody vote this through.
But I still want Kirk Schultz standing in front of the tanks, but you know, take the money. Just take as much money as you can, Kirk.
Just fought a good fight.
In a little more detail into the situation with the Pac-12 and the board meeting on Tuesday. You know, the Oregon State president will be on the call as well, because, you know, they're two leagues, so that's it. It's just those two. And from what I understand, you know, she is also a proponent of this. She may be even a little more aggressive than Kirk when it comes to getting this proposal granted. So it should be an interesting board call there Tuesday. I have a funny feeling that the board of presidents will roll their eyes at this proposal, but presidents are known to be somewhat collegial in the meeting rooms. I don't know that they'll grant it, but maybe they'll just, get partially grant it or maybe give some kind of thought to it later. I don't know what they'll do, but both Oregon State and Washington State presidents will be on the call to pitch the proposal and stand in front of the tanks, as Pat would say.
There you go. Fight the power.
Fight the power. All right. Well, we will see. We'll stay on top of that. Ross doing a lot of work, by the way. I'm not. I don't know what Pat's doing, but I'm not.
Watching basketball.
Yeah.
Ross is on top of the playoff. I'm watching basketball.
Yeah. I even watched college hockey this weekend. Yeah. Getting prepped for Frozen Four, you know, big event, obviously. But Ross has a story on the G5 coaches and ADs feeling like, quote, we are a farm system. They're just left to engulfed in a power struggle. G5, or as college football's elite is engulfed in a power struggle. G5 left just trying to survive. You talk about Southern Miss coach Will Hall spending his days trying to fundraise for NIL. The impossibility of these G5s trying to compete with the big guys. Recap this story for us. It's very good. Get it on Yahoo Sports.
Yeah, it's nothing new, right? Like the gap, there's a massive gap between the Power Five and the Group of Five, and there's starting to be a gap, as we've discussed on the show, within the Power Five itself. But that P5 or P4, soon to be P4, in G5 gap, you know, is wider than maybe ever. And I think it's exacerbated by certainly the TV deals, right, at the Power Five level, these billion-dollar TV deals, but also NIL, you know. And we all know that, right, Power Five teams poach NIL or G5 rosters with NIL. It's been done for a couple years. And Group of Five coaches and ADs are saying now, you know, they're seeing the effects of it. They're seeing the impacts on their rosters. You know, they're all conference players are leaving for better, honestly, better NIL deals, right? More money at the upper tier level. So kind of just wanted to dive into that in that issue, but also coupling it with something we've been talking about now for the last month or two, and that's the future of an athlete compensation model and what it looks like if NIL growing the gap is going to, coupled with whatever new compensation model comes out, will that even grow the gap more between the G5 and the P5, whatever that model is? And will the G5 just at some point get completely left behind? There's fear among many G5 athletic directors, many G5 coaches that will happen, that they'll get eventually left behind. A couple of things from the story I thought was really interesting. Just quotes. Jamie Chadwell, Coastal Carolina, told me that Power Five teams are Liberty now. Mm-hmm. My bad. Yeah. Moved to Liberty last year. He told me that that Power Five teams exhausted of scholarship limits will add players as walk-ons, and then the NIL collective will foot the bill for tuition. They'll add an extra, if the NIL deal is supposed to be $150,000, they'll add an extra $50,000, and it'll be a $200,000 NIL deal to cover tuition. And that's happening quite a bit. I think that's been happening, but you're starting to see it more happen more and more. Chadwell, along with Rhett Lashley of SMU, who's actually moving from G5 to P5 with the ACC, they both agreed that it's time for a Group of Five playoff. You know, it's time for to do their own four-team type tournament. Of course, there's a really big problem with that, and that's money. And the value of what I'm sure you both have thoughts on that, and the value of what a Group of Five tournament would produce, right? And they got a spot in the CFP coming the next 2 years, and an automatic spot. They get $1 million in CFP distribution each G5 team, their school does, you know, and they'll get that money, that $4 million for participating in the CFP. Do you pull out of the CFP to do this? Would Fox and ESPN would they entertain some kind of, you know, individual playoffs? So those things, those are just some interesting kind of nuggets there, diving into this issue.
Pat, I'll let you have your thoughts first, because I have thoughts.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, a G5 four-team playoff that's on Tuesday and Wednesday from DeKalb, Illinois, and Troy, Alabama. That sounds good. I mean, A, you're not, first of all, you would have to give up the honey hole that you've already got with getting money and an automatic bid from the power, from the playoff. Secondly, TV doesn't want it. Thirdly, you are eliminating any chance you have of going to get that playoff shot as a, fine, if you're a 12 seed, but you get the chance to go play a 5 seed and shock the world. You know, that's like the NCAA basketball tournament team saying, no, we'll just go play in the NIT. You have the bids. Just take all the bids. So I don't like it from that standpoint. I don't. I think that's
not going to happen.
No. First of all, the money's not going to be there. Secondly, yes, you're giving up your spot at the table, which I don't see happening. So don't like that. And if this is happening, I mean, I feel the pain. I'm not sure this is as apocalyptic as, again, these coaches want to make things out to be. Maybe it is. Maybe they are losing players hand over fist, you know, to go be third stringers at other schools. But players like to play, and there's only so many chances to play. So anyway, go ahead, Dan.
Well, that's my point. The transfer portal works both ways. And if they're taking your guy, they're kicking someone off their team.
Well,
and so
sometimes
you are,
or if they, I mean, if they're going to a roster of 120,
if they're
like
going
the
to, yeah, guys, if they're going to
guys
110
want to
man
play
roster,
that yeah. I'd find that to be, I'd have to see some serious data that says there's guys that could start at Southern Miss that are going to just sit there as walk-ons as player number 114 at Mississippi State. That right. defies well, common sense, human yeah. behavior, and logic. Could it happen? Sure, but in big numbers, I don't think so. You want to get to the league, and you want to play. You want to get to the league, and you get to the league from anywhere. They don't care. The NFL does not care where you play college football. If you're good, you're good. And until you're playing.
Toledo's going to have a first-round draft pick.
Yeah. Check the rosters. Okay, yes, more of them come from the high major because the talent goes there, but they will go find you. Man, the San Francisco 49ers once traded 4 draft picks to move up to get Lance, Trey Lance.
Yeah.
Out of North Dakota State, he played 1 game. They'll come get you. So I don't believe that. It's always a pot. Everyone's always quit. I must have missed the era when these G5 schools were competing with the SEC, and I must have missed this. When was the MAC beating the hell out of the Big Ten? I don't. What was I asleep for that one? Was that the COVID? I don't know. When was this, Pat? Yeah, like occasionally Toledo will beat a 3-9 Michigan team, right? And everyone will go crazy. Or Ohio beat Iowa State this year. They were never in the game. You're going to lose the players. I wouldn't be wasting my time having 10 meetings a day. I'd have my time scouting the bottom of the rosters of these other guys and coaching up my guys. Because you're going to lose. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like saying, well, I'm gonna raise some money here and I'm gonna buy this company and not Apple. Apple was going to buy it. I'm going to raise the money and buy it. No, like you don't stand a chance. Do something else. This sounds a lot of, I understand the plight of these guys. I really do. It's harder to be a college football coach. You also get paid more. It's harder to do almost every single career in the world. Nobody's industry has sat still for 50 years and not changed. Virtually nobody. Everybody's industry gets disrupted. I understand their complaints, but like none of this makes sense. You're going to start your own playoff? Go back to play 1AA. You win it every year.
Yeah, that's the other alternative.
They're all running to get to this thing. Get in, be 12, be positive. I understand the frustration. You see it in basketball. Like you could have 2 wins last year. You have 28 this year. You go back to 2. Like everything can just go. But that's you gotta recruit every year. You gotta do your thing. But we are seeing in basketball particularly that and I know it's not football, and you need a lot of numbers in football, but the push for playing time has in some ways, it has adversely affected college basketball because you watch these games and most of these teams are very incomplete. the Kentucky, Dukes, Carolina, they got a lot of flaws and then they get a lot of losses. And we're trained to be like, oh man, I can't wait for these teams to play. They're 30-2. They're 30-2, right? Instead, it's going to be like a 7-loss team's going to win the national title or something.
Go
ahead.
There's only two teams left in college basketball with 2 losses, by the way.
Yeah,
everybody's losing all the time.
Everybody's losing because it's spreading out. Now, football's different, but I don't know. Go ahead, Ross.
Terry Bowden would like a word. Dan.
My old coach. He's a former Yahoo employee.
That's right. He is. When I talked to him on the phone, he mentioned it. He's like, oh, I used to work at Yahoo back in the day. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? What?
Sure did.
I had no idea. I didn't even remember that. Like back in
the
early
2000s.
A lot of employees through the years.
So Terry Bowden, while at ULM, I think in 1 year, he lost to 2 offensive line starters, quarterback and cornerback. They all went, he said, to Power 5 level to be a backup. And he claims it's happening quite a bit. Now, you could understand how it could get frustrating. I think things are, yes, players are trickling down too, right? We've seen that.
Did he fill those roster spots?
Well, not with players that were up to their standard, I guess, the ones who left.
They were backups at the Power 5.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing some of them probably weren't filled that way. They might have been filled by his own roster, just a move up, you know. You can imagine the Yoel Monroe backups.
I'm looking at this roster right now. I mean, they're coming from all over.
Yeah.
Cisco College. Yeah. University of Calgary. Yeah, they're coming in.
I think Cisco. Obviously there's movement, you know.
Did not get a lot of power fuzz.
A trickle down, but I think the impact is more felt at the G5 because they are losing what these coaches are saying, their best players. Like, you know, Chadwell reeled off. I think this offseason he lost basically his top returning defensive tackle, his top returning cornerback, his top returning receiver. He said of the receiver who went to LSU, quote, those guys would be all conference for us. LSU paid for a car and an apartment and like $300,000. What do you do? you're kind of screwed. And you know, part of this story is about the future though, right? And like the money that you need to have to field a more competitive roster in these group of five schools, as y'all know, right? A lot of these athletic departments thrive on student fees. They don't make very much money. They don't make profit. These football teams even don't make profit. And I think the fear is if you're going to start a revenue sharing model or some kind of new athlete compensation model, a direct pay to athletes, they don't have the money. They just don't have the money to really do it. And some quotes here, this is from Will Hall. If you get left behind in this next change, it's catastrophic. You might never come back from it. And then Toledo's AD, Brian Blair, you're heading to a model where there is going to be a consolidation at the top and then a batch of others and then a group that is left out. We want to make sure we're in the second category. We want to be in that catch-all second group. There's just this fear, you know, that the Davids aren't going to be competing with the Goliaths for very much longer.
Yeah, and you know, again, I get it and I understand it. And I mean, I'm sure it absolutely sucks to have good players that you have coached that you're looking forward to coaching again the next year who up and leave. But I as Dan said, this has kind of always been the case. I mean, there's more player movement now, but there has always been a gap there. And one of the things, you know, the bottom of FBS keeps getting bigger because we keep adding schools, and I don't know why.
Yep. Right.
I don't know why. I don't want to, you know, keep seeing like Central Arkansas or Tarleton or whoever else become FBS schools. I have enough trouble keeping up with 133. I don't need 140.
Well, they try to stop that with that entrance fee.
Yeah.
You know, remember it went from $5,000 to $5 million now.
Yeah. Good. But like, you know, Louisiana Monroe was one of those. When they were Northeast Louisiana, they could win or compete for national championships in football in the FCS level. They went up a level. They've never been any good. Never. Not at all.
One double A used to be really good back in the day.
Marshall was an FCS school. Appalachian State was an FCS school. I mean, some very good programs.
Very good programs. 40 players are invited to the NFL Combine from Group of Five and FCS, about the same as ever. Whatever that's worth. I don't know. I don't doubt it. I just, when were they competing? And again, like some Louisiana Monroe was, they were 1AA. You now have a chance to get into an actual playoff game. You have to just sell yourself as something different. I just don't know when anybody at the MAC ever thought they were going to win anything. And so except they're definitely Mac not. Title. Except for the a MAC
Boca,
title.
Boca Raton.
I mean, when did any of this stuff actually, I just, you know, I hear them, but coaches like to complain. Go ahead.
Throw this out there for Louisiana Monroe, 1994, 1A. They went 1A. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 straight losing seasons to start. Then they went 6-6, then 4-8, another 6-6, 1, 2. Oh, they had an 8-5, but then there they are, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're on a 10-year losing streak again. They used to win national championships, and so this is what they signed up for, basically, and that's what they've gotten.
Yep. Did y'all see that? I quoted it in the story. I pulled it from a CBS Sports Network interview. But Jeff Hafley, Boston College, you know, left for the NFL coordinator job. He gave a long answer on why, and he basically pointed to the fact that he was, quote, a general manager as a college head coach, didn't do enough football, and was trying to manage a, quote, cap. But you really don't know what the cap is, and so you're fundraising, and so he pointed to that for his departure. I know we talked a lot about that movement, you know, movement from some of these crazy, like just the weird cycle, right? Chip Kelly and Halfley's move, and more so the three Group of Five coaches who left, head coaches who left for Power Five coordinator jobs, including, you know, 1-2 days into spring practice in Sean Elliott. And a lot of coaches are pointing to the fact that these guys don't want to be, quote, general managers. They want to coach more football. And so that was to a degree, I think, why a lot of these moves were made this cycle.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Again, I don't blame them. I just don't think it's a tragedy. And again, like if your industry is the same as it was, you know, I heard somebody recently said to me, well, you know, can you imagine Woody Hayes coaching in this era, you know, what he would say, like, who cares? Like, he stopped coaching in like 1978, didn't he, or something?
Yeah, when it was no longer acceptable to punch people on the side.
Yeah, that's fine. If I bring back any, like, imagine a doctor dealing with the hospital, you know, I was a surgeon in 1978. Now I got to deal with these insurance companies and my hospital merged and forget it. You know, okay. Like, I don't know what, 1978, people like us just sat there and wrote one story on a deadline into a newspaper, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like, that was it. Yeah. I mean, it's just a different thing. So I get the frustration. I just don't really have that much sympathy. And I think the smart coach is the one that's going to be like, yeah, whatever. I'm not spending my time trying to outbid LSU. You're not going to win.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to happen. So just sit there and I would spend all my time trying to tamper and get players to come down and play.
Well, someone's Clay Helton looked at it like you do, Dan. He said this
Clay's
is my 30th year of 30th year of college football. The responsibility of a head coach has changed dramatically. You're recruiting the players on your team. Now more than ever, there's more administrative duties to raise funds. You've seen some guys make lifestyle decisions rather than being a CEO of a major corporation. And that's what it is now, right? You're just the head coach of a college program at the G5 or P5 level is now more than ever not about football as much, not about X's and O's, but about recruiting and culture and fundraising.
It's a Calipari method of just saying, I'm going to recruit one and dones, right? Instead of like, you know, those guys used to, they'd recruit a player and they wouldn't talk, go into the NBA and hope that the player wasn't, and his dad wasn't thinking about it. All right. That was the thing. And then, oh my God, he left to go to the NBA. We need an age limit. We need this. How am I going to keep these guys? And Calipari just started talking to him when they're 16, saying, come to my place and you're out of here in 1 year. And I'll just keep the train rolling. That has worked to generally his success. Maybe not as much as Kentucky fans would like, but it hasn't been for a lack of talent. So I don't know. All right, let's go to break. We'll be back right after this. All right, I like it when the new guy on the block does a little talking, perhaps out of turn or not. I don't know. Texas isn't known to be quiet. They say what they want to say. Chris Del Conte did an interview.
Texas has never walked into a room in which it didn't think it was the most important person or entity.
No, absolutely. Is it still? Well, we're going to find out.
Yes.
But two items in a recent thing. He said it's going to be 2 years, basically. Intimated. It would be 2 years of the 8-game schedule, and then they're going to go to 9, which would be, I think people in the, you know, SEC are pretty excited about. Got all these great teams. Let's play each other. And then the other is he wants the he believes the ideal plan is moving the A&M game back to Thanksgiving week, including Thanksgiving night. There is another SEC game that night called the Egg Bowl,
which is
when the crazy really comes out. Texas A&M would be probably a higher rated game, but can you throw your crazy cousins to the curb and move the Egg Bowl? This is, if I'm Mississippi State, I ain't moving my game.
There's a lot of people at Mississippi State and maybe Ole Miss as well that would probably like to move the game. I don't think a lot of people like it on Thanksgiving. Now, I think it's great on Thanksgiving, and I grew up on watching it on Thanksgiving. When I was in college, it was on Thanksgiving. So I think it's great they get the center stage. You know, they get all the attention. And for schools like that, that's big. But there are definitely people, not just fans, but I think people in administration and
I would
stuff
not give that
don't
up.
Like it. Yeah, that don't like it on Thanksgiving. But that's a huge stage. And what if we have doubleheader? Didn't we have that before? Didn't we have a Thanksgiving doubleheader, like a 5 kick and then an 8 kick or something?
Now you're going against the Dallas. Now you're going against the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the problem there. Yeah.
Have an NFL game at night.
Yeah.
But and that is a problem. Mm-hmm. But going against the Cowboys.
Yeah, A&M and Texas have played on Thanksgiving itself before. I mean,
yes,
that has historically happened quite a bit. Yeah. I love the Egg Bowl on Thursday, and it's just it's niche and it's cool and it makes me pay attention. And I think for those schools, it is a great stage. I can understand from a personal enjoyment standpoint, I wouldn't want to go to a football game on Thanksgiving. I'd want to have Thanksgiving at home with my family and we'll go the next day or whatever, but it is a nice opportunity for them. Who wins that tussle? Usually the bigger dogs win all tussles, but that's an interesting one for Sankey et al. To deal with, and for ESPN to deal with, deciding who would get the Thursday platform. For the 9-game schedule, yeah, all right. That should happen. And I think we've all been expecting it, and they've kind of dallied around for years, actually, on that, speaking of things that should have happened and didn't happen. But you got 16 teams. You need to play 9 games. Let's get with the rest of the nation on that front and do what they need to do.
Yeah, I think it was kind of expected that they would do this 8-game kind of new model, 8-game schedule that they came up with for 2 years. It would be like a 2-year rotation, and they would in all likelihood move to 9 in 2026. And that's what Del Conte kind of confirmed, that's kind of the plan. SEC is not announcing that. Certainly I got a quick text from somebody in the SEC office after he saw Del Conte's comments and made sure to tell me that the SEC is still in the process of exploring multiple ways they could schedule games in the future, blah, blah, blah. So they're not all done yet with that. But, you know, the SEC going to 9 games takes up another non-conference spot that they would normally have played against maybe the group of five. It's something that came up to bring everything circling back. It's something that came up in this story. In fact, Clay Helton of Georgia Southern mentioned that is if Clay Helton and Terry Bowden both mentioned that to me. There's a fear that the Power Five will at least limit their amount of games they play against a group of five, these bye games that cost, you know, $1.5 million in, you know, for a G5 program with a budget of $40 million, you know, $1.5 million is pretty nice. It's a good chunk of their budget. So that is definitely a fear. And with the SEC eventually going to nine, that, again, that, you know, SEC plays a lot of non-conference games against the Sun Belt down there in the American and all that. So that's interesting to watch. That's a hit on the budget of some of these G5 programs.
Yeah, yeah, more good games for us, though.
More good games for us. And
I will not mourn the loss of the Alabama-Middle Tennessee game. Let us all have a moment of silence.
I would
they
hope.
They could all stop playing the FCS or UMass.
Well, that, yeah. I would hope the option is not, oh, well, let's just not play any good non-conference games and
probably
keep our Sun Belt and FCS games.
Probably be one of those.
Yeah. That's where all of a sudden, I mean, like, politically, Florida and Florida State could not drop each other. South Carolina and Clemson could not drop each other. Kentucky and Louisville? Kentucky's kind of made some noise about
it. Isn't there a law? Didn't they come up with a law? Or is that just basketball?
No, that was basketball, and they talked about it. They threatened to have a law because Joby Hall wouldn't play. But then everybody kind of got with reality.
I think they should pass a law.
Well, that's fine. They should. I mean, if that's what it would take, then do it.
Yeah, they should play. I don't know. Well, we've seen this problem. Who said Indiana stop playing Louisville or something?
Yeah.
That in the big you see it all the time.
Yeah, but that was nowhere near as
teams
big a deal.
Dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah, people dropping. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'd be pretty excited about 9-team SEC. I certainly understand the budgetary issues for the G5, but my life will carry on if I get to see more Texas, Georgia, Florida, Oklahoma, stuff like that. I'll be okay. I'll comfort myself. The disappointment.
I think most
Terry Bowden
will be with you.
I'll watch with Terry Bowden. We'll talk about him. I'm all for the nine, and I don't think Ole Miss and Mississippi State should give up. They were rude the day they give up that Thanksgiving night.
Thanksgiving,
take it. Yeah. Don't give it up to these Texas guys. It's if it's valuable, Texas wants it.
Texas versus Mississippi. I can tell you who's winning that one, Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you have it? I mean, these guys are all the new guys. They really get to doesn't matter.
That never enters into the mindset for Texas.
Not for Texas. What about the rest of the league?
It should. It absolutely should. You should say, Texas, welcome. Now earn your spot.
And look at Ole Miss is, first off, Ole Miss is a top 10 program going into next year.
Yeah.
And Mississippi State has been consistently good, if not occasionally very good, for a long stretch now. Obviously not last year, but, you know, it's not the days of when they were both just horrible and always on probation.
Right.
Who's won more games in the last decade? Sure. Texas A&M or Mississippi State? I think, or certainly Ole Miss has won more, right?
I don't know.
They don't have to take a backseat to anybody.
Yeah.
Stand up, Mississippi. Stand up.
The sip.
All right. A little basketball here.
Mm. What's that?
The NBA had their all-star game. Did you see this all-star game?
I did, actually.
I refused to watch.
I did not watch
either.
There
was no way I was turning it
on. I watched the three-point and the dunk a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard the dunk was terrible. Three-point was exciting. The dunk was terrible. The game was terrible. It was 211, was that it? To 184, something like that, or 186, I don't know. 397 points were scored. I did not watch. I generally think that all-star games are for kids.
Yeah.
And so, like, I remember being a kid and being like, oh, my God, like, you know, like, wait, Michael Jordan and you know, Magic Johnson on the same, that's like, and Isaiah Thomas on the same back. It's crazy, right? And then eventually you're like, oh, that's how it works. I'm bored. I haven't really watched an All-Star game in a long time, but people get fired up about the All-Star game. The NBA obviously wants to put a good foot out there, especially right after the NFL ends. And this thing was, I would imagine, as unwatchable as a 397-point NBA game would be. No defense whatsoever. So it kind of illustrates some of the NBA's quote-unquote struggles, which in part is their TV ratings are pretty flat at best. There's definitely some, it's still a popular entity, but it's not like this booming time. LeBron and Steph are older. They've, you know, it's not the best of times for the NBA. And a couple things, you know, I think there's a segment of fans that don't like the way the game's played now. Just way more wide open, analytic-based, three-point-based, skill-based. College basketball is more of a traditional what you remember of basketball. And, you know, I wonder if there is an opportunity here for college basketball to, you know, I don't know if it's going to grow much, but to kind of maybe take some of these fans that are a little disillusioned by the NBA. And along those lines, Adam Silver announced that, well, he said the NBA is going to reassess their G League Ignite team. Now, if you remember, they started a G League team. G League's like their minor league, but they have a team called Team Ignite, which features anywhere between 6 and 10, usually annually, kids that went directly out of high school to the G League instead of going to play college basketball. Because they thought this is a better route to prepare for the NBA draft and for the NBA, and they've had some success doing that. But he announced that he's going to reassess that. He's, quote, now some of these same players who didn't want to be one-and-done players because they felt it was unfair and they wanted the ability not just to earn a living playing basketball but do commercial deals that weren't available to them in college to hire professional agents, an opportunity that wasn't available to at college it now is, they now, all those same opportunities have become available. I'm not sure what the future of Team Ignite will be because there was a hole in the marketplace that we thought we were filling, and basically NIL is now filling that hole. Team Ignite fans will be disappointed, but conceivably, there's like 6 or 10 more really talented players back into college basketball, which I think was one of the things college basketball was missing. All of this is going, saying, are some of the changes and challenges for the NBA. Could this actually help college basketball a little, Pat? Is this a glimmer of light after like rain clouds for a long time here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that, sure, more talent is good, and that we've already seen more guys stay in college because of NIL opportunities, you know, and maybe they're not, you know, future pro superstars, but guys that have familiarity with the fans. Armando Bacot for North Carolina has been playing center there for 100 years. He was on the team that lost in the national championship game 2 years ago. He's still there. He's in year 1, 2, 3 for the year 5 now. People know him. Zach Edey, year 4 at Purdue at 7'4". There used to be a no time was would you get a 7'4" guy who could play to stick around for 4 years. So you're already seeing some of that. And then if you, I think you add that next layer of really good, talented freshmen in there, then yeah, it could only be better. And we are, look, there's some very talented freshmen right now. Kentucky's got some. Duke's got some. We're seeing some guys that can really flash. So there, you know, a lot of people like to complain about the product in college basketball, and I get it. It's not back in the day when Larry Bird played Magic Johnson. Larry Bird was a senior and Magic Johnson was a sophomore and that sort of thing. And Patrick Ewing played 4 years and Ralph Sampson played 4 years. But we are still seeing a lot of good players who are coming in and actually staying. And I think the product, while it's dispersed, there's a lot of good teams. There's not much in the way of juggernauts, although keep an eye on UConn again. But I think this will help have more appeal for college basketball. People turn on and say, "Whoa, that dude's really good. This is fun to watch."
You know, not to turn the conversation back to football, but
go ahead.
We've seen this in football, right? The NFL released last month the early entrance by juniors, and I think it was like a low, right? That we haven't, at least in the last several years, we saw the early NFL draft entrance go up almost every year. I think 2021 was one of the highs. It was 100 and almost 130.
It was 58 this year.
Yeah, so
since 2011. Yeah. It was 130 in 2021.
The 135 in 2019, yeah, and then you could see it drop with NIL, right? Each year, 2022, 100. Last year, 82, and this year we're in the 50s. So it's great. It's a great thing for college football and college basketball. All the college sports. It's great for. Didn't we just have UConn women's basketball player say she's returning?
Paige Beckers. Yeah,
not going to the.
Isn't that
not
that's
going
like
to
a
the
COVID
WNBA.
Year even right? Like an extra because they have to stay 4 years.
Might be, yeah,
and there's been a debate. Can Caitlin Clark make more money at Iowa?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the salary is not that big in the WNBA. She certainly will play on a bigger platform in college basketball. Mm-hmm. There's no $10 million per, like, if Iowa is back in the Final Four, it'll be, they were doing $10 million last year, right? That Final Four?
I can't remember, but it was a big,
it was massive.
Number.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows Caitlin Clark's the most famous college basketball player in the country.
Yes. Yes, she is.
So, do you give that up? You know, I'm guessing she will, but she's got an opportunity for that COVID year, yeah. So all those things are happening. I don't know. I mean, college basketball is always getting kicked around. But I just wonder if there's like some NBA fans, obviously, maybe, you know, just ones that are like, I don't really like that style of play or whatever. And you get a few more. Look at like the college basketball has not had the last mega star in college basketball was like Zion Williamson. And that
I would say that's accurate. That was the guy that, yes, you absolutely had to turn on the TV to see. And I don't think we've had one since him.
So, I don't know, maybe there's something. Possibly. Rick Pitino's not happy. Not a fan of college basketball. Not a fan of the St. John's, whatever they're called. St. John's, what are the
Red Storm.
Sorry,
not
Red Storm.
Not a fan of
Red
his own
Storm.
Team.
Well, no, yes, no.
Yes, no. Absolutely not.
I'll give you he lost to Seton Hall. This is his first year at the Red Storm, and much excitement going into the season. They're 14-12 now, ninth place in the Big East. I'll read you your quote. I'm going to read five quotes, and you can decide which one's your favorite here. I've been disappointed the entire year. I'm sure Georgetown coach, he didn't say Georgetown coach, but he's sure Ed Cooley, who is the Georgetown coach, is disappointed. I'm sure the DePaul coach is disappointed. Doesn't even know who it is.
He was fired.
Yeah, but there's somebody coaching. I love a 70. When you're in your 70s and you got millions, I don't know who that guy is.
You really don't get it, do you? Yeah.
You'll say whatever. When you lose, everyone's disappointed. Didn't even, DePaul coach, I don't know. Joel is slow laterally. He's not fast on the court. Instead of Joel Soriano, these are all players. Chris Ledlam is slow laterally. Sean Conway is slow laterally. Brady's physically weak. Drissa's slow laterally.
Good Lord.
Yeah. We kind of lost this season the way we recruited. We recruited the antithesis of the way I coach. It's a good group. They try hard, but they're not very tough. It's not the job. You can be at Missouri and recruit slow players. Believe me, it's not St. John's. We had to put this team together the last second. We'll never, ever do that again. Do we have...
Man.
You can bleep it out. I don't know. Do we have facilities? Yes, we do.
But we're doing... That?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he did.
But we're doing something about it. But that's not the reason we're losing. Facilities has nothing to do with guarding. And then the Whopper, I just can't. This is the most unenjoyable experience of my lifetime. This has been so disappointing. If you know anything about Rick Pitino, I'm going to let that lay. Like, okay, really? This is it? 14 and 12, and you got some slow guys that are nice kids. Anyway, Pat, you know Rick. Which one's your favorite quote?
Well, I've got to go with that one, the most unenjoyable experience of my lifetime, because it's so perfect Patino. Like this, you can press play on 15 different press conferences after a bad loss, and this is what you get. Hyperbole, the world is ending, everybody sucks. I don't suck, but everybody else sucks. My staff sucks, my players suck, the fans suck. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing, a little bit different content, but this is Rick Pitino after a bad loss. He's the worst loser in the history of basketball that I have ever come around, which is one reason he doesn't lose very often, because he makes everyone miserable around him until you play the next game, and then they play like their hair's on fire so we don't have to go through this crap again, and they win. But this is who he is. And again, like just the hyperbole is incredible for Rick. It always is, win or lose. You know, this is the greatest victory I've ever had. I've enjoyed this season more than any I've ever coached. He said that 20 different times. So this is classic him. I'm glad he still got that in him at age 71. It's funny, like this is New York though. This isn't Lexington. It's not Louisville. It's not Providence where, you know, you walk on water to a degree. I mean, Mike Vaccaro came out and blasted him in the New York Post. The New York, like, win some games and pipe down, Rick, is basically going to, I think, be the response to this. So, but this is such a quintessential Rick Pitino rant. I just loved it.
What poor player is not physical or athletic?
Physically
enough?
Weak.
What did he say?
Weak. One who's weak, several that are slow.
They're all slow. Brady Dunlap, physically weak. But he's not slow. So he could be like, yeah, but you guys are slow. I mean, you know, a few more push-ups. Right. You can get strong. It's hard to get fast. A lot easier to get strong than it is to get fast. Brady's got a future. Anyway, good times by Rick. We like an angry Rick Pitino. Always good.
Oh.
Most unenjoyable experience of my lifetime. Interesting. I would have had a couple other. I would have ranked higher.
Well, I mean, but that's without even putting that into context. Which,
didn't he get fired for a whole scandal involved? You know,
multiple scandals.
I mean,
that didn't
there's
even
been a lot of stuff.
There's been a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but the great. I'm going to guess this was like 20 minutes at least after the game ended. When Rick wins, he's in that press conference in 2 minutes because he's so excited to talk to the media. When he loses, he's in there dog cussing everyone until somebody finally comes and gets him and says, Rick, you've got to go to the press conference. And then he's still dog cussing everybody while he's up at the press conference.
Tremendous. Yeah. He said what he wanted. Like I said, 70-year-old, he doesn't care.
Yeah, what a way to spend your 70s.
I think this is. I actually think this is the
same way he spent his 40s.
Yeah, this is how happy he is. This is the guy who said Larry Bird's not walking through that door. Like, he's miserable as the Celtics coach.
Oh yeah.
All right, we don't get political here too often, but I think we would have universal agreement that there's a bill proposed in Tennessee that just a bill introduced in Tennessee, SB 2636. Aims to prohibit the selling at retail of cold beer.
What?
No more cold beer sales at the retail. You can get it at a bar, you can get a cold beer. But you go into your liquor store, your grocery store, your gas station, wherever the heck they're selling beer in Tennessee, warm only.
Mm-hmm. What kind of disastrous idea is this?
Well, Ron Grant of Pepperton and Paul Rose of District 32 seem to think it's a good idea. Here's the issue. I think there's got to be a workaround here. This is what I read. I don't know. In rural Tennessee, a lot of guys are buying a beer and then driving around in their car drinking the beer. And then they throw the can out the window. Okay. So they're literally drinking and driving.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
And I have seen this I've been at like these gas stations. They'll have a table, like a big cooler full of beer on ice.
Oh yeah,
especially
right
in the South. Yeah, so these guys are just buying their beer, one, and then they're drinking it, and then they stop. And a lot of these guys commute a long way, so they're trying to prevent that. So it is good intention. But you can't shut down cold beer in the whole state of Tennessee.
No, you can't.
Something tells me this won't pass.
Talk about throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
We're going back in time here. This is an old thing. You know, I had, because of where I went to school in Starkville, Mississippi, I had the unfortunate experience of living through this. You know, in Starkville, when I was in school, the first maybe 2 years or 3 years I was in school, you could not buy cold beer in Starkville, Mississippi.
What?
Yeah, you could not buy cold beer. When I was in school, they changed the law. They changed the law, and you could buy cold beer. And you know, I don't know if it's still this way, but also you couldn't buy beer on Sunday. As well, you couldn't buy alcohol on Sunday in general. But yeah, this was, I think, at least the first 2 years of my college experience, you had to go get beer out of the liquor store or the gas station. You got to get a cooler, and you got to get ice, and you know, you got to cool those puppies down.
My feeling is the guy that's going to drunk drive around while drinking beer is going to he's going to have a cooler in his car.
Yeah,
he'll
just gonna drink the warm stuff. Yeah,
or he's gonna drink it right. Or if he's really hard up, he'll just drink the warm beer.
Yeah, the average guy just wants to pick a six pack up on the way home from work, or just grab some cold beer. He's the one getting screwed. We gotta stand with those guys. Don't drink and drive. Don't drink a beer while driving in your car.
Do not.
That's not a good idea.
Right.
Like, you could sit in your driveway and drink the beer. That's it. You can't, only have a couple. No, like, you're literally driving a car. Do not drink while driving. Shouldn't have to really be a big issue here. But you can't screw all the good Tennessee people that are just want a little six pack. Come on, man.
If they want to make that a law in Pepperton, you go right ahead, but not the whole state.
Yeah.
And otherwise, crack down on drunk drivers. Do that. Go get them. But don't crack down on the people that want to buy a six pack and then not have to go home and wait for 90 minutes for it to get cold enough to drink.
All right. People's Court.
Okay.
Comes from the world of darts.
Oh, love a good dart one.
You're in Europe. Dart professional darts is a big deal. Huge crowds.
Yeah.
Television. You ever see this thing? It's wild.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's fantastic.
It's awesome.
It's fantastic.
Brits love their darts.
Love their darts. Okay. Well, we have a controversy, and it involves playing defense, if you will.
Does it involve the butt at all, Dan?
It does.
Oh, no.
Yes.
It does involve the butt?
What? Yeah. Dan always finds
get
the
away
butt,
from
stories.
These butt stories.
I'm just reading. I'm reporting the sports news here. I'm reporting the pertinent sports news about
sports
the darts.
News. Okay.
Okay. It involves a guy named Darren Webster, who lost a match to Ron Muhlenkamp. Muhlenkamp won the best of seven legs contest 4-3. Webster refused to hit his opponent's hand. And went on social media and said, to explain why he did not shake his hand after, he said, when you play a guy who farts and stinks the stage out.
Oh, my God.
And then denies it.
Oh, my God.
While you're playing the stall every throw. I'm not interested. I don't even know some of these words. Okay. So basically he's accusing Muhlenkamp of letting loose, stinking up the area where you throw the darts and distracting Webster because he didn't want to use.
I mean, it is a pretty good distraction if you think about it. It's pretty smart. It's pretty savvy there. You know, you drink a gallon of milk before going to the dart tournament and just let it go. Let it fly, Dan. Maybe some beans.
Oh.
So this isn't even the first time.
To the guy, No, the guy on the plane that could strategically
pass gas. This guy.
Wasn't that guy's quote? Wasn't that guy's quote? Oh, yeah? Well, what do you think of this?
So I mean, good. You can't play defense in darts. You throw your turn, their turn, your turn. I mean, it's like slap league. You guys got to sit there and watch them take. But if you can distract them, make them lightheaded, get them off their game, whatever you got to do, that's what they're doing. And this happened in the 2018 Grand Slam of darts, where a guy named Wesley Harms accused the two-time world champ Gary Anderson of delivering a, quote, fragrant smell during a loss.
Fragrant?
Anderson came back and said, if the boy thinks I farted, he's 110% wrong. I swear my children live, it was not my fault. And he went back and said, if somebody has done that, they need to see a doctor. Seemingly, he says it was me, but I would admit it. He said, the guy said, every time I walked past, there was a waft of rotten eggs. So that's why I was thinking it was him.
Oh,
it was bad.
God.
It was, and he started to play better. And I thought he must have needed to get some wind out.
Oh, wow.
So people's court, Pat, is this against, should this be against the rules? Is this against the rules?
Okay. I have a distinct take on this.
Okay.
So having been to Britain several times, and having been in the pubs there, and a lot of those people that stay in the pubs like all day and they're watching soccer or whatever, or during the Olympics in 2012 in London, guess what? The whole place reeks of methane. The pubs tend to stink by like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. So if you're a dart player, where do you play darts? You play in the pubs. So this is like coming up playing street ball on the streets of Chicago. You should be tough, right? You should be toughened to handle the methane and the rotten eggs and whatever is being put out there, and you just play through it, right? If you came up to the pubs of London or anywhere else in England, you're used to it. You're okay. You play through it. You do not complain about it. You win anyway. Justice says no. No, there is no penalty for passing gas during darts.
This is
Justice Dellinger.
Disgusting. But is really a brilliant mechanism here by this man to distract his opponent. I applaud it. I don't know what you can do here, right? Like if you're a judge, the referee, it's like you come over and get a whiff. And then say, oh, you know,
ruling?
You farted.
We have a foul.
Yeah, we have a foul. Literal.
But how
foul?
Do you know? Then you could just, one player could,
yeah,
could dealt it. And then the judge comes and
smelt it, dealt it. Right. Like, That's what they say.
There could be a lot of trickery there. You can't prove
where it
came
from. Yeah, that could be a problem.
From.
Yeah.
That could,
you can go
that
to video a, review yeah. to see who's recoiling or something. I don't know. But...
No.
Dan, you were in London. Do you remember? I mean, I remember some smelly ass pubs there, man.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. I never now I'm
British Open.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't notice that, but didn't notice it that bad. I think that'd be more famous. Justice Anderson, I know you got something.
I've always been a little too concerned of doing the math in 501 than what was, you know, what my area was smelling like. But I do recall playing in a solo cornhole tournament, and I was a new guy to the group, and I think it was on purpose. They stuck me with a lemon, and after we were switching sides, every time I would go over there, his side had a distinct, different scent to it. So I wasn't thrilled about it, and I did not win, and I think that was part of the game, so... It was effective. I didn't like it. I don't know how we can control this, though.
Indoor
guardrails. We need guardrails.
Guardrails.
Tough to enforce.
Indoor.
Rule 13.
Like an IL.
Indoors, yeah. Mm-hmm. Room 13. Rule 13.1.1.2. What does the group of five think of this? Their farts
right
smell
it,
better.
Man.
Power five.
Five.
Sounds like it could be an issue in like bowling. That's a college sport. Bowling, that's an NCAA sport.
Cornhole, definitely. There's definite ways to do this. Maybe even like gymnastics. Like, you know, like you're on like the rings or something and you leave a little. I don't know. This could be a whole thing.
You could crop dust a basketball court from one end to the other, I guess.
There's a lot of ventilation. I personally, it all's fair in the game. I think it's fair. It's uncouth. You're not going to be the most popular player, but it might help you win. I don't know. It's
tough enough.
It's a natural. It's Dartsman. A natural thing. It's a, you know. So what do you want?
Sure.
Tough enough.
Drive through the Taco Bell on the way to the Dart League game.
We're officially out of topics. You might
Take
be surprised.
Your bean burrito, please. Extra sour cream. All right.
Thank you for listening. We will talk to you later.